Hey there. Are you looking for a way to learn more about change management while also having fun and networking with your legal management peers? Then look no further than ALA's annual conference, happening May 19th to 22nd, 2024 in Aurora, Colorado. Registration is still open, and you don't want to miss out on all the educational sessions, opportunities to talk with business partners, and events like the Wild West Welcome Reception and Casino Night on the closing day. It's sure to be a great time. For more information, go to alaannualconf.org. We can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to Legal Management Talk, the official podcast of the Association of Legal Administrators. I'm your host, Valerie Danner. Today, we are excited to have Catherine Allman McDonough, the founder of Legal Lean Sigma Institute and a member of ALA's Professional Development Advisory Committee, what we always fondly call the PDAC. She's here to discuss a topic that is, you know, really simple, change and change management. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thank you so much for having me today. This is one of my favorite topics, and it's something that comes up a lot in our PDAC discussion. So I'm really pleased to join you today. Thanks, Valerie.
Definitely. So with that, let's dive right in with a simple question with a not so simple answer. Why is change especially a tough concept within law firms?
I'm glad you started with it with an easy entry. We like to joke all the time, like, change is easy. You go first. The reality is change is challenging no matter where you are. And many people will say how they believe that lawyers really hate change. I don't think so. I don't think lawyers dislike change any more than any regular human being does. But it is really true that we've got unique challenges. So the way I think about it is there are kind of two primary challenges in legal that don't exist in other conditions. The first is lawyer brain, and the second is the business structure itself. So let's just talk about the lawyer brain for a second. We know that we're dealing with a population that, according to research, tests very low in sociability and very high in skepticism. So convincing of the need to change that whole process is going to involve more than just painting a rosy picture about what could be. We've found more success in bolstering that with asking the lawyers to respond to a very simple question. What are the risks in continuing to operate the way we are now or the way we always have, and encourage them to come up with what is the worst case scenario? And then what? And then what? If that happens, then what? Because then you're tapping into the strength of the lawyer brain, and then they will wind up articulating the need for change. So that's one of the things that we just find works really well. And it turns out most reasonable people, in the face of new evidence or new information, will change, right? If we show them there's greater risks in just let's keep going the way we always have than there are in changing. I mean, that's kind of the way to overcome that challenge.
I think there's something to be said for not diving right in, for taking that step back, because you can understand, and like you said, it's not just lawyers. We're all resistant to change in our own way. And you think about like day-to-day life challenges, you know, the world feels very heavy right now, and having your day-to-day at work be the same is a bit comforting. So you can understand why there is that resistance to it.
All creatures, I think, like some degree of consistency, but let's not mistake predictability for that being, and comfort being, the smart decision. We're in business after all. And our role within ALA as business professionals is to do what we do with PDAC, which is peek around the corner, you know, and see what's coming and make sure that we are serving in the same role that the lawyers are for their clients, which is advisor, trusted advisor. That means getting uncomfortable sometimes.
So with that in mind, what are some of the steps you find helpful when coaching firms and our members through some of this process?
I think what you said earlier about just the climate that we're in, it's hard to actually create space for change. It's hard to create space for conversations about change. So thinking about change management, I mean, we at the Legal Lean Sigma Institute offer a certificate in change management. And it's been fascinating to see how much interest there is because of this thing that you just suggested, is if we can help people understand that change management in and of itself is a planned and purposeful event, that this is really done at the beginning of the work, where you're anticipating resistance and you're employing a variety of strategies and tools to get to where you want to go. I mean, that's really some of the steps that are going to be helpful, and seeing change more as a project in and of itself, using good processes and good skill sets to manage that project, starting with picking a change management to follow and educating people about what you're using, whether it's Cotter's model or McKinsey 7S, there's ADKAR, Kubler-Ross, Lewin's model. They're all good models, but tell people which model you're going to be employing and then lead and manage people through the steps of that change management process. I think it's good to assess whether there's any real interest or the will to change. We teach people the importance of the five critical questions: why change, what to change, how to lead change, who is to change, and how to sustain change. And so if you think about these things as a project that has a series of steps with specific tools to use at every single step, you're going to be fine. Just, you know, don't pick the most challenging thing maybe to start with, but learn and develop those skill sets, see which models, which tools work best in your organization, and you're going to be fine.
But you hit on something interesting about if there's not a will to change, it's really going to be hard to make it happen. So what if you're meeting that barrier? How do you overcome that? Is there another step you can take backwards and work forward to try to overcome it?
I think it's incumbent upon us to make a good case for change. And that includes thinking through all of the potential benefits of change with a cross-functional, diverse team stakeholders. And when you can surface the financial benefits, the so-called intangible benefits, the cost savings, and you can walk through, it's not, you know, a cost, it's an investment. By investing X, here is what we can expect to get as a return for that investment. And if we haven't done a good job with that and harness that power of the cross-functional team, then we're going to be met with resistance. Even as you suggest, when we have done a good job with that, there still could be a no. I wouldn't lose heart or hope, because the reality is there's plenty of stuff that can be changed. So sometimes it's a matter of understanding, take it an evaluative approach and understand why we were unable to convince the powers that be that this would be an important thing to change at this time. Maybe it's just that there are so many other projects that have been given a green light that people are just at capacity. You know, don't take it always so personally that we haven't done a good job of convincing people. Maybe there isn't a protocol for reassessing or reprioritizing projects that are in the queue. That happens with a lot of firms that I work with. They are, I apologize, it's inelegant, but everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say it. Many firms have what I would call the full six pack or eight pack. They're just missing the plastic thingy that holds it all together. So there's a lot of siloed approaches going on. So it's, you know, kind of coming back up to the 50,000 foot view. And let's just say it like it is, a lot of the management teams, this is their first time really, you know, leading an organization through today's conditions. And there's a lot going on. There really are. So thinking about what clients want, what do our clients require, what are our strategic objectives, tying what we are talking about to those established initiatives or important initiatives that we must plan for. I mean, that's what's going to give you kind of your best footing. But if there's resistance, understand why that is, and then see where we can come up with some countermeasures. Where, you know, wherever you have a restraining force, there's probably going to be a driving force that's its direct opposite. So we want to increase the driving forces and reduce or come up with good countermeasures for those restraining forces. But not everything is going to get a thumbs up. It's the way it goes.
That's just life.
Well, it is.
You kind of alluded to it too, but what do you think about the role of burnout too playing in like a hindrance towards progress?
Yeah, I think for sure there's going to be burnout when it's nonstop change or change for change's sake. I mean, you have to understand that people do have a saturation point. So using some good tools to start with, assessing the organization is what we would always recommend. We have what we call a P+ scorecard to evaluate where the organization is along the many P's in the ecosystem: planning, people, process, project management, pricing, profitability, performance management, etc. Or I use TOWS, TOWS. Most people are familiar with SWOT, but I've been using TOWS more lately, where we're looking at the external factors of threats and opportunities, and then seeing how do we bolster our weaknesses and leverage our strengths in response to those things. So, and then using good planning and good project management, whether it's using an impact ease matrix, what is easier to implement but might have higher or maybe medium impact, and what's, you know, assessing the degree of difficulty from the get-go. If you're undertaking a lot of high impact but also difficult to implement projects, you're going to have burnout. So you want to sprinkle, you know, you want to plan and then sprinkle your projects across the spectrum, and then understanding all your different stakeholders, doing power interest grid, and making sure that we're not always going back to the same people. For one thing, they will be exhausted. And for another, it just feels unfair, whether they're receiving attention for a good reason or not so good reason. So, you know, we do want to be sensitive to that. But if it's a planned event, you shouldn't be having burnout. You should be actually getting people pretty jazzed and getting that motivation up. It's like, finally, this thing that's been driving me bananas for years, I feel seen, I feel heard, I feel like my contributions matter, and this idea that I've had for such a long time is finally seeing the light of day. So it could be a great thing if it's done well.
And I think that's a good message too, is if you're starting with a smaller, less sticky change within the firm, like, what is a victory, a small victory that you can have? I always like to end on a message of hope. And I feel like if you have something where you feel like you won, it'll be easier to sell people going forward on the next one you need to tackle.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think I always say you can't fake being genuine. And so if you do something for real, then you're going to avoid what we're calling theater of innovation. And clients can definitely tell, you know, when it's for real, because these things affect employee experience, they affect client experience, and they affect brand experience as well. So people might say hope is not a strategy, but I think hope is wonderful. And it's actually more than just about hope. You know, I always say the best always want to get better. And, you know, change is virtually a guarantee. Right? It's going to happen. So I have to drop in one of my favorite quotes from Lao Tzu. which is if you do not change direction, you may end up where you are heading. So, you know, thinking about whether you want to get better in increments or by leaps and bounds, you know, it's like the second we get together and we start to focus on something, boom, we can immediately identify how we might make something better. And that's really energizing for people. It's taking that collaborative approach, building that culture of collaboration and continuous improvement. And again, where we are working with a cross-functional and diverse team of stakeholders who have a real interest and are impacted by it, we harness that power and we really get extraordinary results. So there's not just hope, it's a guarantee.
But oh, and we all want to feel like we're a part of something.
Yes, we all want to feel like what we do matters, and the importance of purpose cannot be understated in all this. And so I think this is directly supportive of diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility, that sense of really belonging. This is how you do it.
Well, I can't think of a better note to end on than one, Catherine. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having me. I love this topic, and I'm just really delighted always to spend a little time with you and ALA members. Thanks so much.
Well, we love having you.
Thank you.
And thanks for everyone who tuned in. Be sure to subscribe to the Legal Management Talk podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe to us on our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. Until next time.